Continuing the third half-hour lecture on simple processes, you should understand that the first requisite of a simple process is that it can be communicated. That's the first requisite. It can be communicated. A process which is difficult to communicate is, of course, perforce, liable to be a difficult process just in terms of communication, but it also might be totally unworkable as a process, or it might be only minimally beneficial in auditing. And the funny part of it is, you happen to be trying to shotgun out of the bank its common denominators of aberration, unthinkingness, and so forth, and you'll find out the only common denominators that can be common denominators are simple common denominators. It's got to be a simplicity to just shoot anything out of a thinking machine. If you hit any of the complexities, you were hitting too many thinking machines, that is to say, too many branches of the thinking machine. So by simplicity, you will do the most arduous job of auditing with the most simple commands. Now let me tell you how simple auditing can be. This you will not really be prone to believe at first, till you yourself test it. Would you have to say anything complex to the preclear at all, really? Well, I know a process that has in it at most about three sentences, which is one of the most interesting processes you might ever care to run on anybody. It rather departs from what your general idea of auditing is, and it could be very, very easily reduced into God knows what. So let's look at the process just as I give it to you here, and not as a complexity of this process. And that process is the real reason why the laying on of hands is effective in healing when it is. The real reason why. All right, and this process we would call point processing. Be about the simplest process that you could possibly do. The auditing command would be, put your attention on my hand. A variation of the command, see if you can see the bones in my fingers. And a variation on that, see if you can see through my hand to the back of it. Total. Certainly no more commands than that, since we've given two which are really extra. And I sometimes vary it just to vary the monotony, but it almost means the same thing. Put your attention on my hand or on my finger. And what do you do with that hand or that finger? You just hold it to the affected portion of the preclear where he has the chronic somatic and change it randomly. And every time he signifies that he, with his eyes closed, has been able to see your fingerprint, your finger, the bone in the fingernail, the palm, anything that you have designated there that he should see, as soon as he has designated that he has perceived this to some degree or another, you then move the indicating digit to another portion of his anatomy. Interesting process, isn't it? It is the process which underlines the fact that man has worked consistently on a complexity of this process, achieving minimal results. The actual truth of it is, when he did achieve results, he said or indicated that in essence and did the process more or less that way. To monotonously place your hand on the right foot, the left foot, the right foot, the left foot, each time getting this response, the right foot, the left foot, the right foot, the left foot, the right foot, the left, next thing you know, you got a machine doing it. So that anything like monotonous processing here, in terms of spots, monotonous selection of spots, is to be avoided. So you just vary it enough to keep the fellow alert to what you were doing. The process would be worked perhaps in this fashion. Now, I'm just talking about clearing a preclear. I'm not talking about a chronic somatic. I'm talking about getting somebody out of his head. You touch his right foot. You'd say, now, do you see? See if you can see my palm. This guy's eyes closed. Now see if you can sort of look through your foot and see my palm now. Anything like that. And he finally says, yeah, mm-hmm. This is an occluded case, too, you know. Yeah, mm-hmm. And you say, okay, and you put your palm on his knee. He says, mm-hmm, yeah. Now can you see my palm again, and you put the palm on his ankle. Mm-hmm. Now you put it on the left foot. Mm-hmm. Now you put it on the left ankle. Mm-hmm. Just about the time he expects you to put it on the knee, put it on his right foot. Now he's sure there's a deep significance in the way you're spacing your hand and what you're touching your hand to around the body's body. He's just sure there's a deep significance in all this. Actually, there's no significance whatsoever in the position of the hand as long as you liberally cover the various areas. Now, after you've touched the person to the left, to the right, above and below, top of the head, the back of the head, the front of the nose, the chin, under the throat, the left knee and the right knee and the right side and the left side and the right elbow and the top of the head and the left elbow and the hand and the top of the head and the back of the head and so forth, and you just go around this way, round and round, round and round this way, he's liable to experience some considerable changes in the state of his case, the like of which he ain't not experienced before. And they're liable to surprise him. He's also liable to turn on all them somatics he's been holding back. So let's be alert with this process. And let's remember that we ought to remedy a little havingness now and then. And we ought to do something else with this process. If our pre-clear gets into too bad a condition. Now, the greatest workability of this process comes about when you must render an emergency assist to an individual. Let's say that somebody has fallen down and broken his leg. It should appear to you immediately what you would do. Fallen down, broken his leg. Actually, you think the first thing you should do is process the guy. No, this isn't the case. Actually, the first thing that you should do for this case is to find out how badly he's hurt and to keep him from moving that leg. Get him warm, because he's going to be in a state of shock shortly. Throw something over him if you can. And before he's moved, and anybody that's broken his leg, let's make sure he didn't do something to his spine, too, huh? So you have him move his hands and move his head a little bit, and let's see if he's got control of the extremities of his body, just to make sure his back isn't broken or something like that, because that kind of an injury can sneak up on you. And let's keep him down. Let's not let him up. Let's not let him up. You understand that? All due respect to how horrible that is as an auditing command. A soldier who suddenly stands up after shock very often dies right that second. A man can be hit with a bullet, and if somebody had presence of mind enough to sit on his chest, the guy would still be alive. But he didn't get his chest set on, and so he stands up, and the immediate stress and strain, with all of the body's blood laking in the center of the body, the sudden stress and strain is so great that he just conks off, that's all. The shock hits him. The shock didn't hit him till he stood up. Automobile accident. Some guy's going to jump out of the car and run down to the nearest telephone. He's all bashed up, you know. He's cutting, bleeding from a cut in his forehead, and he's pretty bashed up. And he's going to jump out of that door and run down to the drugstore, which he can see just down the block and so forth, right after that accident in order to get help or something of the sort. Well, if you were a pedestrian right there, no, if he's going to go anyplace... He's going to go anyplace. The car isn't on fire. You just push him sideways on that seat. And stay there. That's that. That's a hell of an auditing command to give in at a state of shock, isn't it? You couldn't do anything about it, of course. It'd be horrible. But remember, you can always pick up a command of that character, particularly if you know it went in. You'll save a man's life that way. Well, all right. We've got him down now. We've got him covered up somehow or another, so he isn't going to chill. And we found out that he doesn't have a busted spine in the bargain. We're going to pick up something and put it on the broken member as a temporary splint so that it won't twist around and become a compound fracture. Well, a compound fracture can happen awful easy. All those bones are under tremendous tension on the ligaments. All you got to do is twist that leg just a little bit and pang, it'll come right out like a rocket through the flesh. So we put a little splint on him. That holds the member in line. What would you do then? Well, your answer would probably be, well, leave him alone. No, that is not what you would do then. You'd put your hand on the sole of that foot and you would say, look at my hand. And you'd put it on the toes and you'd say, look at my finger. You'd put it somewhere near the injury and say, look at my finger. You'd find the limb go brrr. Every time you did this, it goes brrr, and shudder. He's sick at his stomach, but as you do this, he gets less and less sick. An hour or two later, you have turned on the 4 or 5 day bruise. He's out of his shock. He won't get a shock. How long did you have to do that? Well, maybe he only did it for 15 or 20 minutes. Maybe he only did it for 5 minutes. But it's a cinch that you did something to him. What'd you make him do? You didn't say this to him, but in effort, your action said to him, all right, so your attention is interiorized. So it hurts. Well, your attention belongs in the environment around you. Let's not only get through, but also let's get outside of that injured limb. That's that. You've made him feel and feed actual energy to an exterior point from the body. How much further can you go than that? You know, you can hold that hand within an inch or two of the toes, and he can still see it, and he still knows exactly where you're holding it. Don't invalidate him if he misses, but he knows where you're holding it. If a guy is in really good shape, do you know that he can see that hand way out there from his toes? He can still see it, feel it, know it's there. A foot, 2 feet, 3 feet, 4 feet, 5 feet, 10 feet. What do you got when you got it out to 10 feet? You got a guy's perception on. Interesting process, huh? This process is probably superior to earlier assists. And it is a very beneficial process when it comes to just plain, ordinary, routine, run-of-the-mill exteriorization. An interesting process. It is an interesting process because it immediately bypasses all symbols. You've just communicated what you wanted him to do, and from then on, it's action. See that? You've got a direct theta action. Now look at that and find out it's in company with holding on to the two back anchor points of the room in its super simplicity. Now, anytime you can get a guy into action as a thetan, you're in. And of course, that's what it does. Directly. Well, I've seen some remarkable things happen with this process. And I dreamed it up quite some little time ago, but I fooled around with it. Mostly because it seemed so strange and terrific at the same time that so much could result from so little actual action. And I had no real explanation for it, and so I didn't announce it. I had an explanation for it. Yes, communication. Yes, we this, that, all kinds of explanations. But no real explanation of what was going on in an occluded case and why an occluded case could see your hand when he couldn't see anything else. Oh, and here we get into the occluded case. Well, now, I didn't give this lecture to tell you about the occluded case, but it actually should be included under simple processes for simple people. What's the occluded case done? Well, once upon a time, let's say when he was a baby, a cat walked up to him and began to hiss like mad, and he put up a screen. He didn't want to look at the cat. He was terrified. Didn't want to look at this cat. He put up a black screen. And this black screen is put up with the postulate there is a cat there. Now time goes on, and a truck almost runs over him. So he puts up a black screen and its postulate. There is a truck there. He goes through life. There's a cat there. There's a truck there. There's a woman there. There's a school teacher there. There's a book there. There's memory there. There's a machine there. There's pictures there. Every time a black screen, what do we finally get? We get there's something there, there's something there, there's something there, there's something there. And the question always after the incident, has it gone away? It's not safe to take a black screen down until it's gone away, is it? Once you put a black screen up, which wipes out and crosses off all perception of the object, you will never know from there on whether or not it's gone away. The one missing piece of information in this entire action is, has it gone away? Yes or no? And the fellow who is occluded is simply running on this basis. Is it still there? Well, probably. Now, they have the damnedest things they think are sitting around, and they answer this question with the foggiest uncertainty you could imagine. Is it still there? Go ahead, if you're occluded, ask the question. Is it still there? The answer is generally, well, yeah, probably. Now, this shuts off lookingness. What gives the guy a signal to turn on his lookingness? And what turns on all this occlusion when you get a loss? Because we know the mechanisms of occlusion also account for this very strange phenomenon. An individual loses something that he considers valuable and everything goes black. Oh, this is the first time he was absolutely certain something was gone. Is it gone? Gone. The end of cycle he's looking for every black screen he's got is echoed in the disappearance of some possession. See? Something's gone. He's sure something is gone now, so he decides he might as well get rid of the rest of his black screens too, you know, only they haven't got the same item to be gone, so he never completes the cycle of action. There's the mechanism. It's just purely mechanical. He's got all kinds of black screens scattered all over the bank, and they're all asking the question, is it gone? He's asking the question to them, is it gone? And now he gets a certainty. It's gone. He tries to run into cycle on all the black screens he's got, just like that. Brr. It's just stimulus response. You see, this isn't reasonable. It's, is it gone? Now the very fact, gone, turns on his black screens. See? Is it gone? Gone. Well, the next action, he sometimes does this, he just throws the black screen away. Well, he didn't care what's there. He loses something, he throws a black screen away. Disrelated action. For instance, somebody's mother dies and all of a sudden he hears voices. Ooh, his voice is all over the place. His mother died, he hears voices. What he did, his black screen is asking, he's asking of all these black screens, is it gone? Is it gone? Is it gone? Is it gone? And all of a sudden mother dies. Gone. End the cycle, throw away your black screens. Zoom. All of a sudden, jabber, 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 yob, 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 yob. Not gone, still there, see? And sometimes you'll find a pre-clear sat for an hour or two in terror under this bombardment from all directions of inexplicable things, voices, colors, mock-ups, visios, delusions, anything you want to call them. He just threw the black screen away. Now, what's the total mechanism? He lost something. This was the end of cycle for times when he protected himself for something. He threw the black screen away and got the delusion, and so he thinks he's crazy. That's actually all there is to this mechanism. You'd do very well to sort that out very calmly and carefully and look it over very, very well. Now, what does this technique do specifically? He can see your palm. You got your palm there. Nothing ate it. Nothing burned it. Nothing broke it. Well, what do you know? It is gone. Ha ha. Didn't eat you up. As the auditor, so therefore it can't eat the pre-clear up. So this hand technique answers this one. Is it gone? Yeah, it must be, or I wouldn't have my hand here, you, the auditor, are saying, really. Only this never comes up. You just never discuss that with this process. The fact that the fellow can see your hand, and that your hand is there, and that your hand isn't suffering, tells him that somebody else, more reliable than himself, has tested the environment and found the enemy missing. So he unoccludes. interesting process. Now, the process falls down only when you as an auditor fail to use it with a something and nothingness angle. Now, let's say we have this fellow, and we're giving him an emergency assist. He broke his leg, and we weren't there at the scene or anything of the sort. We pick him up the next day, something like that. He's lying in the hospital, and we want to do something for him. Well, we don't want to explain to him the totalities of Scientology and repose him and indoctrinate him in the pre-clears code and a lot of things like that. We just don't seem to be able to communicate that well with this dreary specimen. He's all bunged up, and he feels bad, and so on. But we could communicate with him. Is this where it's hurt?
Oh, yeah, he'll say, yeah, yeah. That's where it's hurt.
Okay, put your attention on my hand. Look at it. Shut your eyes. Look at it. Put your attention on it. You get that leg jerking around and turning hot and turning cold and so forth. And it ran just about so far, and such was his state of shockiness, that he was unable to completely... His state of shock was bad enough so that what little energy you got him to put out in looking put his energy too far down the line. What would you do? He'd be a little bit better if you did that. You'd say, mock up an acceptable foot. So he mocks up a brand new, fresh foot. Oh, nice, beautiful, fresh foot. And you ask him now, is that acceptable to you? Oh, yes, yeah, oh, yes. And you say, well, did it snap into your foot? Oh, no, but I can move it in. After Preakler said this to you several times, after you have indoctrinated him quite thoroughly in what you want, you have auditor's license. At that time, you can simply have him chant, it's the boy, in the case of a male Preakler, it's a girl, because the case must be hopeless. You want an acceptable foot, which means simply this. You want him to mock up a foot in certain condition and in such a condition that the foot will actually snap in. You got that now. The foot will snap in. You as an auditor want no truck with mock-ups that you have to move in. Do I make myself exceedingly clear? Let's never make a mistake on this. Just because pre-clears will argue with us, and just because auditors occasionally are unclever enough to get a pre-clear to jockey the mock-up around until it snaps in, let's not conclude, therefore, that mock-ups sometimes on some pre-clears don't snap in. That's just balderdash. That's a phenomenon which exists. It doesn't even depend upon an automaticity. What it depends on is the actual mass hunger of the limb itself. And that limb itself is actually what's dictating its acceptance level. And the first mock-up that you got from this pre-clear was very simply this. What was acceptable to him as a Thetan? Yes, we know what's acceptable to him as a Thetan. A perfect and beautiful leg is acceptable to him as a Thetan. But what's acceptable to the guy's leg, huh? That's another story. And if you go on auditing in the condition of where the fellow just moves it in and moves it in and moves it in, you're just getting what's acceptable to the Thetan. Now let's have him vary it around until it actually snaps into the injured member. And that will probably be a leg broken in 15 places, chewed up in various ways, thoroughly diseased and running pus, just to get a mild variation of what will snap in on an injured member. And you get him to snap this in, put it up, and it'll snap in, and he puts it up, and it snaps in. What do you know? Its quality begins to improve. And finally, it isn't superating anymore. It's just all broken to bits and diseased. And then the first thing you know, after a few more, it's not diseased anymore. It's just broken up. And after a few more, it's not broken up anymore. He's getting a whole leg in, and what do you know? You've made it acceptable to this leg that it be whole. Now, that's about all there is to that. You've just changed the acceptance level of his leg. You're trying to make his leg well. That's what we're trying to do. We're talking about body healing right this minute. Trying to make his leg well. So you get the acceptance level of that leg. It isn't that the leg has a personality all of its own. It's that the preclear has himself compartmented out a certain self-determinism and relegated it to his various limbs. Just by the process of training, he learns how to walk. He wants that limb to know how to walk. So he says now the limb knows how to walk. Now having put up that compartment against that limb, and so on, it has a personality of its own. We get into granting a beingness, which is a little more complex than we're taking up right this minute. And he's granted a beingness and a knowingness and an acceptance level, of course, to that leg of various kinds. The leg has had experiences and developed a personality of its own, and that's about the way it flies. So when we do this kind of a process, we would remedy the havingness on the acceptance level of this leg, and we really get things that snapped into an injured member. This applies to any part of the body. Now, let's go a little bit further than this. What would we do as the alternate process? We would have him spot the spot where it actually is in the physical universe where the accident occurred. You follow that? The actual spot where the accident occurred. We'd have him spot it. You'd do it this way. Now, where were you hurt? Okay, which direction is that? Now, are you looking at a picture of the actual place in the physical universe? We want the actual place in the physical universe. To hell with the picture. All right, what distance is that away? Can you spot the actual spot that it occurred? Okay. All right, now let's walk up some more havingnesses for this leg. Two, three more. All right, now let's spot the spot where it occurred again. Good. Now let's spot the center of this room. Now let's spot the place where it occurred. Now spot the center of this room. Place where it occurred. Center of the room. All right. Now let's mark up an acceptable leg. And again, and again, and again, and again. Now the spot where it occurred. Now the spot in the room. Look at my hand. You only got three commands here, really. Three sets of commands. One is, where did it happen? What is the spot in the physical universe? Which is accompanied by, of course, where is the spot in this room? You're not asking him to go to that spot. You're just asking him to point to it with his hand, if possible. Every time with his hand, not kind of cocking his eye around a little bit, but point to it with his hand. Point to the spot in the middle of the room. Now, that's just spotting space as a separate, distinct process. It's cleaning up the one common denominator of all universes and why they get stuck together. They have common impacts. Impacts in common between his universe and the physical universe. You want to pull these two universes apart. So spotting spots in space, remedying havingness, and look at my hand. One, two, three. And that is an emergency assist. And that's all kinds of auditing. And that's more darn kinds of auditing than we could have done in the last 4 years. And it's good auditing when it's done well, particularly. Now, supposing the fellow is out of the body. Closing is completely outside, and so forth. And yet has no certainty of perception. Give him things to look at that he knows, you know, aren't dangerous. You could have him look at your hand and go to various places in the room and look at your hand again. Just keep it up. It's a good process. Not the best in the world for an exteriorized person, but this process doesn't even break down just because the fellow's exteriorized. Now, if you know this process, you know a process. It has three parts. Of course, two of these parts are always together. When you spot a spot in space, remedy the havingness. When you remedy havingness, spot a spot in space. You savvy that? These two are Pollux and Castor. These two are the Goldust twins. They just fit square together. They're hand in glove, glove in hand. Spot a spot in space, remedy the havingness. And when you remedy havingness, if you're not getting the phenomenon of snap in, you are not remedying the havingness. I'm sorry. Because later on we'll get into an argument about this. But I want to be terrifically clear about it. I find I am always able to make a mock-up snap in on a pre-clear. That requires a little bit of imagination from you as an auditor. You have to maybe think a little bit grimier, a little bit meaner, or be a little less appalled by it. But you can always make them snap in. And they don't do any good unless they're snapping in, because you're making the pre-clear force a mock-up upon an injured member. Of course, it's acceptable to him as a thetan, but you're making the thetan then force the injured member to accept a mock-up, and you are processing, in essence, either a body or a leg when you are doing this. Now, if they snap on in him as a thetan, he, of course, is remedied in his havingness in some of the machinery, which he doesn't know he has, so you're remedying again the same thing, something different than the thetan. And when you remedy havingness, that's really all you're ever remedying, is something other than the thetan. At any time, he can simply say, I have, and he has, so why would we remedy his havingness? And the other process, look at my hand. Now, this applies to any case, any level, any time. The spot in space, the havingness, and look at my hand. On the subject of processes, the auditor who goes into a complex process, when he can go into a simple process, should be exercised or brought into present time. What's he trying to do?
That's one of the best questions to ask. What's an auditor trying to do that's trying to make a simple process into a complicated process? He's trying to make something of it, which is, of course, an obsessive impulse that a thetan can get into. He'll get into the idea of making something of it, making something of it. And if he keeps going this way, he turns into somebody like Immanuel Kant. He'll write thousands and billions of words on something like man ought to have... No, Critique of Pure Reason is man has an innate moral sense. And the next book in line to that, which he wrote also thousands and thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of words with German adverbial, participial involvements and so forth, demonstrates conclusively that whereas he does have an innate moral sense and that this is very innate and so forth, the reason he has it is because he gets paid for it. This is the whole content of his second volume on this. And after he's got all through with this, he's called himself a liar in book two to book one. We can only say about Immanuel Kant that he made so much out of it that he completely jammed the philosophic communication line about 1790, and it's never really gotten moving since. See, philosophy used to be an indoor sport, epistemology, that sort of thing. Fellows used to sit around and chin-chin and gab-gab, walla-walla on the subject and have a lot of fun. Any educated man, any gentleman, and so forth, of course, had an acquaintance with the various philosophers, but he himself also knew something of the theory of philosophy. And up to about 1790, and actually really up until about 1815 or 1820, why, you could expect a doctor and an attorney, something like that, if they were out fishing or something like that, to be talking about philosophic imports of one kind or another, which were amusing to them. It was no deadly or serious game. About 1790, Kant started to put the kibosh on that, and we get writing on the subject being less and less intelligent until in 1930, the teaching of philosophy consisted of memorizing how many philosophers there had been. And a doctor of philosophy was somebody who simply knew a catalog of philosophers, not one who could philosophize. Now, for God's sakes, look at this as an inversion of an entire educational strata in an entire society. A doctor of philosophy is somebody who would memorize some philosophy. Now, you'd normally definitely expect that a doctor of philosophy would be somebody who could philosophize or who knew something about philosophy and who could dream up a few philosophies. And, you know, the theses turned in by individuals of the level of 1930, 1940, and so forth would simply make you vomit from a standpoint of education. They've taken a paragraph out of Kant to demonstrate how they can't. And that's about the end of the philosophic line. Now, that's a very bitter statement, but it's only bitter to this degree. A society has within it a certain intellectual strata, men who can be expected to think, who can be expected to speculate on things, and to whom people turn, that is to say, to whom people less well-informed and more active turn, actually, for various opinions and so forth along certain lines. This is rather common. Lord knows you would just never turn to anybody who had simply been made into a catalog. A catalog is a library, and any time you try to make something on two legs into a library, you just have missed entirely the whole subject of education. In other words, it started to decline at about 1790 and came on forward practically into modern times as a gradual decline that man was less and less adjusted to the process of reason. Until today, reason is simply something which you memorize. Now, don't think because we kick around thinking on the basis of figure, 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 that there is not a possible rationale, that there is not a possible sensibility. There is a possible sensibility. There is a native rationale. It is when this ability to know and to concatenate or compare knowingnesses so as to assume new answers, it is only when that native ability declines that we become worried about an individual's ability or sanity. Knowingness is not a dumb thing into which one would never think. It's not that sort of a thing. Knowingness would contain many abilities. There is a native ability toward logic and a native ability toward reason. And it doesn't happen to be the ability to memorize. That is the ability of an ENIAC, a UNIVAC, a thinking machine. It is not the ability of a human being that can be very vastly respected. Any man who considers himself cultured and yet who has only memorized cultured things is not a cultured man and will not do the culture very much good. It is the ability to engage in a native reasoning power. The ability to take observations and summate them into other observations, which a society lacks, which is on the downgrade. That society which is on the downgrade lacks these things. Supposing we made all knowledge other determined, that'd be a very serious thing, wouldn't it? And yet, what have we done to a doctor of philosophy, a PhD? We have made all knowingness other determined. Now, it would be, the only thing I'm leading up to here, is it would be a very, very serious thing for me to do, me personally to do, to lay out for you a highly complex system of logic and so forth, which, when applied to individuals, would make them well, and tell you that you must abide by these logics and so forth, and give you vast books of them and so forth to study and so on. That would be a terribly serious thing to do. It would be particularly serious since we do have a grip here on the actual woof and warp of the mind itself dwelling in this civilization at this time. That would be very serious. It would be just as serious for somebody to pick out Scientology for his randomity. This has nothing to do with me, has nothing to do with you. But the individual who would pick out Scientology, well knowing its axioms and definitions for his randomity, and would attack these axioms and definitions of untruth, a fellow would have to be pretty wild to do this, because he's going to get wilder before he gets calmer. You see how this would be. Scientology is a description of those agreements which have taken place over a period of time, which themselves have resulted in time. It's a study of these agreements. And unless you can see and agree to the fact that there are certain definite truths in these agreements and that there are certain definite common denominators here, it's not for you. You might have come on a different track. Nobody is trying to force down your throat that you came on this track. It just happens that case after case, year after year, these summations become more and more able in the remedying of human sorrow. And as a result, we have a pretty close approximation of that agreement. We haven't all the agreements there are, even this moment. But when we get to a small handful, which is as highly workable and as extremely powerful as we have, we must have come in somewhere close to it. Remember that this work is not my thought in the first place. This work is the work of an observer, a trained observer, if anything, who is perfectly willing to work in a rather natively logical, intuitive line on this subject and relearn every time he finds out that his observations do not compare with his actuality as it has existed to that moment. In other words, a recodification of observation. If you want, let's look someplace else. So that didn't pan out, so let's look someplace else. So this appears to work a little faster on preclears than others. Well, let's look. Let's look and examine and know some more about it. Now, all of us contain some native knowingness along this line, and therefore our agreement need not be with an aesthetic or with any type of a delivery or any type of a compulsion. Our agreement, if it exists there, lies on these two levels. It either agrees with a native knowingness which you have that this agreement took place, and on your findings that these processes work on preclears. It does not depend on anything which I tell you. However, we have codified the matter down to a certain series of fundamentals. Man has been searching for these fundamentals for a great many years. He has been looking for them rather arduously. In the process of looking for them, he has accumulated much knowledge. It was only someone who would be schooled in the field of the physical universe itself and rather thoroughly, and in the field of mathematics itself, much against will and ardor, who would have turned around and done any looking in this field. And at the same time, he must of necessity have been rather disinterested in the problem. In other words, there was no, as far as I was concerned, there was no personal factor in the problem of the mine. I just never entered it from that door. And it wasn't actually until 1947, I guess, or 48, that the thought occurred to me one day, say, what do you know? This will probably take care of these war injuries. And I got them processed out, practically the only time early that I ever used it. And a little bit later, there was a higher state of beingness which could be attained, and so on. And so I grabbed off a couple auditors, and we went to work for a week or two, and I found out this was relatively easy. My interest in the matter, then, has not been a personalized interest. If it had been a personalized interest, we never would have learned this. My interest had to be in you. In other words, we had to look a little bit further than one set of complications, because it took more than one set of complications to map this out. Now, I'm not giving you this as any kind of self-praise or anything of the sort. I'm trying to get rid of me, as far as you're concerned, if you want to know the truth of the matter. We have certain laws and certain fundamentals, which, when followed and observed, which, when known, give us a definite result. For 4 years, in the public interest, we have been attempting to get closer and closer to a uniform solution. Now, I don't say that we're as close as we will ever get. No, certainly not. But we are certainly very much closer than we were 4 years ago. So much closer that it's something like taking the shooting distance of a large naval rifle and a bean shooter. Today, the auditor can drop one right into the spot if he has any ability whatsoever. Now, when we look over this track of agreement, and when we look over thinkingness in general, we discover that most of the people to whom we apply this information are so totally steeped in other knowledge and other determinisms about knowledge that their own native knowingness is quite extinct, if not entirely so. You can deal with a super-educated man today, much on the order that you would wrestle with a bunch of snakes. He just seems to have outs in all directions. You just don't seem to be touching anything there. What you're doing is taking a scoop shovel to this fellow, and you are getting the other determinism off of him one way or the other. He has made certain agreements. As long as these agreements are reached and processed out, he will continue to progress toward a higher level of self-determinism. But when an individual has been seeking knowledge as an other determined thing, as another data thing rather continuously, we get him to a point where he thinks anything he knows comes from elsewhere. He will know sooner or later, immediately after that, that it's all bad. This morning's lecture, I refer to you this earlier lecture, it's all bad. As soon as it becomes all other determined, it is only a short time that it'll become all bad. So all knowledge will become bad to such a person. Knowingness has become bad to an individual, and when knowingness has become bad, livingness has become unsupportable. When knowingness has become bad, livingness has become unsupportable, and yet we are only going toward one thing. We're going toward a return of this individual's ability to receive as an effect anything, to be capable of causing anything, to be able to know anything, and more particularly to occupy any and all viewpoints. We are changing his consideration of the entire universe. One of the ways we change this consideration is simply by unburdening and cutting through the tremendous amount of other determinism with which he has been confronted. It is no joke that the university student of today graduates from the university in far worse mental condition than he entered it. The stress of examinations, the anxieties put upon him, the tremendous expectancies on the part of his people, upon the part of the university, all add up to a condition of mind which, when stressed with other knowingness continually, and a direct and immediate inhibition in the modern university toward any thinking of his own, brings us a combination in a pre-clear over which you, an auditor, could and probably will many times practically weep. You are wading through a tremendous sea of other data to get to this single datum, I am. That's the most important datum there is. But right along with that has to come the datum, you are. I am, you are. When an individual is in a condition where he can realize this, recognize it, know it, I am and you are, he is then capable, you might say, of indulging in a great deal of thinking. But up to that time, he is apt to chew through these old data banks and other knowingnesses and turn them one way and turn them the other way, sort of like sorting coal from one corner of the dark cellar to the other, back and forth, wondering rather hopelessly when the light is going to turn on. Now, if you, as a student, were to be bombarded continually with nothing but data, without adding up any of that data to your own independence, your case would worsen. I can assure you of that. It would simply worsen. That would be that. The amount of auditing which you received would be to a large degree canceled by the constant outflow of data which comes to you. You see that? So it would probably be only after you had left school, only after you were way up the time track from there and received a little processing from somebody who was interested in you and so on, only at such a time as you would have codified some of this information, recognized that it contained your own agreements, and then taken those agreements, which you recognize as yours also, and have made the information to you self-determined as information that your case would be in line to get finished. Well, now let's solve this problem right here in the middle of Unit 6. Let's recognize this. I can give you a tremendous outflood of data. I can tell you more about Thetans and more about civilizations and more about races of Thetans. Oh, you talk about books. We could just fill books all over the place. But you notice I'm not giving you a tremendous quantity of information. Very little data. I'm trying to give you instead the tools by which you can recover data. But how much data do you need? And that also is not very much. When you think of the number of textbooks through which you have plowed, when the number of thousands of words, millions of words, many thousands of them, you unfortunate people, my own, on this subject, it is no wonder that your case as an auditor tends to hang up a little bit. But it will only hang up as long as you don't examine these basic fundamentals and see whether or not they are yours too. The moment when you realize they are yours too, when you look them over, when you understand them thoroughly, in other words, the first step is try to get the communication as straight as possible, then look them over and see whether or not they aren't yours. You at that moment will discover that it didn't matter and doesn't matter a bit whether I thought of them or you thought of them. You see, ownership does not depend upon a tertiary discovery somewhere way down the track from where you first agreed upon it. You see that I discover these things in Earth's solar system 1950 or something of the sort. That has no bearing on the fact of when you first agreed to these things. You see, this that I am doing is not really a discovery. It is an observation of what agreements are you guys and gals sitting around with, huh? Well, what you agreeing to? All right, now, an observation of this, now I simply ask the question continually and constantly ask this question, is this what you're agreeing to? And in asking that question, observing it, that's done by auditing. I learn. Here I say, is this what you're agreeing to? It's simply this. All right, let's find two objects you're not trying to hold apart. Two objects you're not trying to hold together. Two objects you're not trying to hold apart. Two objects you're not trying to hold together. The tone meter starts going up and the guy starts feeling better. Communication changes and so forth. I have asked him in essence, is this what you're agreeing to? In the final analysis, this is it, you see. It's I asking the question. I can ask that question and know full well who I am and to what I've agreed to and the state that I'm in. See, I can know that and still ask this question because I'm talking to another universe and there's no disgrace in not knowing what's in that universe. I've never considered that not knowingness to this degree was a disgrace. That is to say, the idea that you should be able to pervade every universe and pick up every piece of information out of it, one after the other, every datum and every agreement on the thing is a Herculean task. Now, we have common denominators of those things to which people have agreed, and the most powerful tool which you have is just the basic concept of it is knowingness. That's a tremendous tool. You say, well, gee, yeah, there it is. It's K-N-O-W-I-N-G-N-E-S-S. Number symbols combined together, and what the hell does that mean? And go right on and try to make something terrific out of it, see? Try to make something more out of it, and something more out of it, and something more out of it, and something more out of it. It's a pity that we simply couldn't say there are two classes of knowingness. There is self-determined knowingness and other determined knowingness. The preclear runs best on self-determined knowingness. Because in essence, it's all the life he has. Is knowingness. When he hasn't any life, he doesn't know. When he's unconscious, he doesn't know. When he's conscious and alert, he knows. And this is the one condition we can isolate from all other conditions. The most observable difference between theta and mast is that theta can get ideas. But that isn't the highest condition there is. The highest condition is that theta knows and mast doesn't. And so between these two, we discover that the individual whose knowingness is cut down is himself in a difficult situation. Now, ask me, why is it that somebody who has read Kant, who has read, taken him to his bosom, you see, you could read Kant and not take him to your bosom. You could read Kant for a laugh. I do every once in a while. And you could take Locke and Hume and latterly Dewey and Durant and Santayana, and you could read all these people all you want to, you know? I mean, there's nothing to that. Find out if there's anything they're saying that you agree to. Read it for the aesthetic quality. You can go out here and look at all the statues you want to without going crazy just as a result, you know. But when you feel your knowingness is so slight compared to theirs, which is so great, you get into a secondary position with regard to your knowingness. Can you know independently of reading them? Believe me, you can. And it's very possible that you might have gone up the track maybe another dozen years, maybe another 1,000 years, maybe another 1,000,000,000 years, but sooner or later you might have tripped into the very processes, and probably would have tripped into the very processes which here in 1954 I put together and called a codification of the processing of preclears so as to address the subject of knowingness to the improvement of self-determined knowingness. Now, just because you improve somebody's self-determined knowingness does not mean you have to crush his other determined knowingnesses. You see that? I mean, just because you've increased his own knowingness is no reason you have to knock in the head everything he ever knew. This would be silly too, wouldn't it? You have to, however, increase an individual's knowingness up to a point where he is certain that he does know. And believe me, there is no certainty like that, because that is certainty itself. It is a fairly easy plane to achieve, actually, with a preclear today. Any process, then, that we come into, which is a communication or ARC process, which is a process that has to do with lookingness down to sex, a process which has to do with energy, with masses, and so forth, or even with considerations, is junior to a process which directly and intimately addresses the subject of knowingness. Now, I don't say this lightly. We're just taking the top bracket of this scale, and we're weaving it around in an effort to demonstrate to you one way or the other that here sits a simplicity of such magnitude that its direct processing will very often exteriorize a case who has been almost utterly plowed in. Now, you say to somebody, spot off some areas that you don't have to know about. Takes off some of the compulsive knowingness. Let's get the idea now that you know. I get the idea you don't know. I get the idea you know. And I get the idea you don't know. And I get the idea you know. And I get the idea you don't know. That's an idiotically rather unworkable process, but nevertheless a process which is addressed to knowingness. Now let's mock up a whole bunch of people out in front of you, all of whom know more than you do. All right, let's set them aside, mock them up again. Set them aside, mock them up again. Mass of people, each one of them knowing more than you do. Set them aside, mock them up again. Set them aside, mock them up again. Set them aside, mock them up again. You know what we find out? We find out the individual is interiorized into every universe which demonstrated a senior knowingness to his own. And this accounts for his interiorization into the universe of Mama, of Papa, of teachers. And when we say God knows all, and you, you jerk, know nothing, you'll get my idea of why I have a slight contest with monodeism. Our total problem, with a preclear, is knowingness. What he knows is really secondary. But if he does know, I am and you are, he knows this certainty, why, he's in real good shape. How good a shape can he get into? Into the kind of shape where he'd exteriorize and do a grand tour and do this and do that and imitate birds while sitting in the middle of the room? That has nothing to do with his condition. That, in India, would be called fakirism. Nevertheless, we can do it, so we do things like that. But it is not your concentration as an auditor. Your concentration of an auditor is raising the level of knowingness of the individual. What does that knowingness include? It includes an ability to be logical. It includes an ability to predict calmly consequences resulting from certain problems confronting the individual. It includes, as well, a poise, a confidence and a certainty, a pride without which a being cannot live. When we get all these things added together, we discover we have knowingness. And so, first, last, foremost, and always, we are processing knowingness. Do you know that you can take the codifications of Dianetics as they were first released with that popular word on them, Dianetics, and give them to somebody in a hospital? You read them. You're liable to get up out of that hospital bed. Because he was told something by somebody else? No. No. He spotted an innate truth. Not that somebody gave him, but that he himself had. And as such, you have boosted up his level of knowingness. And that works as long as you are dealing with a simplicity. It does not work when you are dealing with a complexity. And an auditor who would make a process much more complicated is, of course, going outside the realm of knowingness of the preclear and beyond the ability of the preclear to agree or trace back the agreement. So as long as you are dealing with a simple, easily codified process, which will be communicated with ease, you are likely to hit the greatest number of agreements the preclear has regarding dynamics 1 to 8. And by hitting these agreements, he sees what he is doing. And out of the confusion of havingness and doingness and beingness, he is able once more to stand up and say, well, I am confident that I can continue on. Now, that is why a simple process works. There's a communication reason why it works, too. A simple process is closer to no form than a complicated process. You process a simple process and you are processing the thetan. You process a complicated process and you are processing the body. We have no great interest in processing the body for the good reason that the thetan in good condition can take care of the body. Yet, of course, you should know in this society which worships care of the body continually those things which take care of the body. It won't damage you any to know even how to make a body. It wouldn't damage you a bit to know how to synthesize all the protein acids of the body. Wouldn't hurt you any to know anything. You can know anything you want to, because there isn't anything bad to know in this entire universe, really, unless you say this knowingness is bad. And that's the biggest trap of all. They try to tell you how bad it is to know something, and it isn't bad to know anything. They would say at the same time how bad it is to get well. Okay? Okay.